Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to my show. Thank you so much for listening. We ask questions here. What? When? Where? And most importantly, why? I've been asking why my whole life. Some of the questions I have found as to why life sometimes throws us a curveball, or a fastball, or a low ball, or a high ball, might amuse you, could amaze you, might possibly confound you, and possibly astound you. You know, in baseball, the pitcher and the catcher work together with the coach for the team to determine what ball to pitch to each batter, because every batter is different, and every situation is different. Some batters hit usually just the left fielder. Some batters are stronger hitters than others. Some batters dislike certain types of pitches. There might be runners on base. So the science of the pitch is an intricate game of mathematics that plays the odds. And nothing is certain. Every pitch is exciting. Every moment is a new outcome. And I have just loved baseball since I was a kid. I just have religiously kept my charts and graphs of every player every time they were at bat. And while my charts and graphs could show a pattern, they never could predict the outcome. And you know what? That's the way life is. Every moment is an infinite field of all possibilities, Dr. Deepak Chopra says. Every moment is the now moment of power. In the words of the ancient Hawaiian people, Hanawa means every moment has all power to change anything. Kala says there are no limits. Aiki is the world is what you think it is. Don't like what you see? Change the way you look at things right now, and you'll see something different right now, and you'll have a different experience right now. What do you have to lose to just try this? My friend and local San Diego jazz pianist plays at a church on Sunday morning whose message is an ecumenical approach, or many paths to God, as opposed to the my way or the highway style message that so often alienates the more thoughtful among us. So on last week's show, Loving and Being Loved, I talked about how I've been really angry with the Christian church and its my way or the highway approach. Their my way gets you to heaven, and their highway leads to hell. I shared how I would just like to shine some light on some of those precepts that the Christian church teaches its members that are just outright perversions of the truth that Jesus came here to teach us, because only knowing the truth will help you be able to get a better grip on that ball of life and be able to play the game and win. I said on my show last week that there isn't any heaven and there isn't any hell. But what I meant was heaven does not have a specific address in a specific physical place. There really is a heaven and there really is a hell. It's just that the way to get there doesn't involve dying. The Christian church is taught that the only way to get there is to die. If you're good, you'll go to heaven, but if you're bad, you go to hell. Well, this week, Stephen Hawking was asked what God was doing before the Big Bang. And he quipped, "Preparing hell for the unbelievers?" And that answer to me said, "I just can't be bothered talking about a God that has a place of unforgiveness and unrelenting punishment for a part of himself." And that's exactly the way I feel. To say that God is love and then say that love would torture and punish a part of itself is ridiculous. But however, some of you who have been listening to my show for the past several weeks, someone who self-mutilates is doing just that, torturing and punishing a part of themselves. And in my life coaching, I've been looking at self-mutilation because I pick at my cuticles until they bleed. And I am learning that this goes all the way back to when I was a child caught in the stress of a violent home and not being able to get out of the situation and thinking that I must be a terrible person because every Sunday we went to church and I kept being told by the minister that my sins killed Jesus. So I bit my nails down to the quick until I could see and taste and feel the blood. It just seemed to be the only way I could identify with Jesus and find some sort of love. Doesn't that sound crazy? Well, it is. But even today, when I pick at my cuticle, I must be trying to find or feel some sort of love, identifying with the shedding of blood as a sign that God loved me. Is this not also at the core of the need to get a tattoo? To shed blood, to commemorate something or someone, looking for a way to resolve the loss of a love or the pain of love? This is just ridiculous love. This is guilt love. This is no self-worth love. We need a new definition of love, not shedding of blood. So as I'm taking this hard shell off around my heart, little by little, and I'm beginning to try to feel something again, I find that I'm not picking at my cuticles so much. Hooray! I'm getting a manicure every week, so my nails look really pretty. And when I do start to pick, I see how pretty my nails look, and I appreciate them. And I begin to feel thankfulness in my heart, and then I don't want to pick at them. It's far better to reactivate that unconditional love in my heart for myself than to continue to live lovelessly and in anger against the past. Because this kind of love is so much more comforting. It's really relaxing. This is the kind of love that is needed and desired. And actually, the Bible says that there is nothing that can separate us from the love of God. David said in the Psalms, "I descended into hell, and thou art there." And then he said, "I ascended into heaven, and thou art there. Whither can I go from thy presence?" Now, David talked about this like it was a day-to-day thing. He could be in heaven or he could be in hell, but wherever he was, God was there. Well, how could that be? Do you know why? Because God was inside of David. And wherever David went, God went. Wherever you go, God goes. Because God is inside of you. God goes everywhere I go. God does everything I do. God thinks every thought I think. God plans every event that I plan. Because I am God in the flesh, giving God a day-to-day experience with this life called the human life. Without me and without you, God is without form and void. We are the form of God. Whether we're fat or thin, tall or short, smart or dumb, a big failure or very successful, rich, poor, old, young, we are all giving God a human experience. We are the eyes and the ears, the feet and the hands, the heart of God right here on earth, right now. And you say it every day when you say, I am. I say, I am Marcy Ann. And you say who you are. And then everything we say after the I am is what I am saying that God is. Wouldn't it be interesting to keep a diary and every time you said I am, write down what you said right after that I am? God told Moses to tell the Pharaoh of Egypt that the I am sent him. He was to go to Pharaoh and say, I am Moses, let my people go. Some people say God is a non-drinking alcoholic. Some people say God is sick. Some people say God is a prostitute. Some people say that God is fat. And if you listen to the media, apparently everything that happens here on earth is either horrific or terrifying, fearful, intensely painful, drastic. And the mortgage on God's house is upside down, and God just lost his job, and God just sexually abused a child, and God just killed 20 first grade students, and the blood is still being shed. And according to the news, and recently, Boston just had a night of hell as the Boston Marathon killers were being hunted down in the streets, one of them finally being killed and the other one wounded and captured. Well, now, why would God set things up like this in the first place? Well, God wanted to have an expression beyond the rocks and the plants and the animals and the clouds and the oceans and the seas and the mountains. And as waves became particles and matter cooled and coalesced, man formed around the consciousness of all that is. And man was made in the image and likeness of a God, because we can create, not just biologically, because the animals and plants and minerals create biologically, but we can think and create like God. Think a thought, see a picture, plan the execution, and then punch the button. Life is made just like we make a copy of something on the Xerox machine. We think a thought, create the picture of it in our mind, and push the button, and it's created. Our life takes on the forms of what we think and speak. Our body manifests what we are thinking and speaking. What we think comes from what we believe, and here is where I am taking some action in my life, because I'm changing how I think about a lot of stuff right now. And by changing some of my thoughts that have had bad feelings connected to them and making new thoughts that only have good feelings attached to them, I'm creating new things in my life that are better. And I'm giving God a better human experience through me. And I'm inviting you to try this too. But there is responsibility connected to all of this. And it seems like today that no one wants to be responsible. It's easier to just blame the government or blame the school system or blame the person who sits next to us at work than to take responsibility for our own actions, because we've had a whole generation here that's been bailed out of most of the consequences of their actions. So how can anybody learn this way? Where is the practical experience that allows them to make better choices? There's currently a case before the Supreme Court that involves a woman who used to work for Walmart, who just got sick and tired of working, and now she wants to get disability from Walmart's insurance company. Her condition, fibromyalgia or chronic fatigue syndrome, is actually a condition of her emotions. She's created a picture in her mind for whatever reason that she's just plain sick and tired of her life, and she doesn't want to work anymore. And she probably felt helpless to change anything, so she went to the doctor. And because the pharmaceutical companies have given doctors all kinds of ways to get out of really treating a patient by telling them the truth, they can just prescribe a placebo drug that alters the chemistry of the patient to the point where they can just get out of their responsibilities as a human being. So some doctor somewhere has diagnosed this woman with fibromyalgia and told her she isn't able to work. So now she wants to be paid by someone for not working. She already has gotten Social Security disability, and now she wants Walmart to also pay her for not working. Well, Walmart is fighting this case all the way to the Supreme Court, and I, for one, hope they win, because somewhere, someone has to start telling the truth and to let people know they are responsible for their life. We are the one who's in charge of our life. This woman could have looked outside the Western medical system and found wonderful people like Dr. Candace Pert or Carolyn Mice or Dr. Deepak Chopra or Viana Stiebel or Dr. Sandra Bedore. All of these people could have helped her go into her heart and find out what was making her so unhappy. And they could have also helped her to change her ideas and her thoughts about her life so she could continue living her life as a happy, self-sufficient, productive person, providing the community with her gifts and her talents and receiving compensation. How did we get to this state of non-responsibility? Well, that's why I'm doing this show today, because I believe that one reason is because the majority of the people believe in a heaven and a hell. And we've just been taught to leave it all up to God, to pray to God, to look outside of ourselves for the answers, go to the doctor, get a pill to make everything go away, and someday we will get to die and go to heaven. And but the truth is, we end up living our life in the here and now in hell. This past week, I saw an episode of my favorite TV show, The Big Bang Theory, where Amy is steadfastly and with great industry and whimsical cunning gradually seducing Sheldon. And he's falling for her seductions while he keeps complaining to his roommate, Leonard, I'm in hell. But he says to Amy, carry on, keep going. He knows she's taking him down this primrose path to compromising his staunch belief that having a physical relationship with a woman isn't necessary and actually could dilute his genius. But he's so loving every minute of her spoiling him and making him more and more dependent upon her for his enjoyment of life, he's willing to go along with it while he's fighting it with all of his might. Such a fantastic real look into the way life really is. I shouldn't do this, but I'm loving doing it, so I'm going to keep doing it even though I know it isn't good for me. It'll be interesting to see how far the writers of this show take this storyline, because Sheldon will never know if having a true and full relationship with a member of the opposite sex is really bad for him or not until he actually experiences it. Otherwise, his beliefs are only theoretical, because it's only when we have an experience of something that we truly know that we know that we know. So I love what Jesus said. He said, I am the way, I am the truth, I am the life. So first we have to find the way, then we learn the truth, and then we can live the life. And after you've found the way, and you know the truth, and you start living the life, that's when you know that you know that you know. So let's take my original thought that I wanted to live in the Caribbean for the rest of my life so I could swim in the warm ocean every day. Okay, the first thing I had to do was find a way to get there. Now, this involves several things. The time to go, the money to go, and if I was going to go alone or go with someone, and if I was going to go with someone, who would I go with? And then secondly, I had to know where I was going to go. So I studied all the islands in the Caribbean in order to choose which one I would like to go to, and I decided the best way to do this was to go on cruises. So this way I explored all of the Caribbean in a relatively short period of time. And during this time of exploration, I learned the truth about my idea. Number one, it gets very, very, very hot in the Caribbean, well above my tolerance for heat, which is around 72 degrees. Number two, the islands have horrible humidity, which I am not used to living in here in California. And humidity makes me feel like I weigh 500 pounds and it ruins my hair. Number three, they have hurricanes in the Caribbean. Number four, there are pesky sand flies and no-see-ems that bite you, and tarantulas and scorpions and land crabs and monkeys and sloths on the land and jellyfish and all kinds of other things that sting you in the water. And number five, there is bad corruption at the government level on these islands, even the American territories, where your American citizenship doesn't mean anything. And if you have a refund coming from the IRS, you can't get it because the original money that was withheld from your wages was withheld by the corrupt government of the island, and they spent it. And even as an American citizen, the IRS can't get it back for you. So, in short, this paradise that I was looking for just simply isn't there. So, finding the way and learning the truth made me realize I don't want to live my life in the Caribbean. I've got it really, really, really good here in California. And I was able to make this decision based upon my experience, which in the words of the ancient Hawaiian people is pono. Effectiveness is the measure of truth. What works is what is right for me. So what is the way to heaven? What is the way to hell? What is the truth about heaven? What is the truth about hell? Do you want to know the way to heaven? Do you want to know the truth about hell? How would it change your life to begin to know that there isn't a heaven someplace out there in the sky with streets of gold and no more pain, sickness, disease, or death, and only love everywhere, and you'll live in a mansion right next door to Jesus? Why do you think we want to believe in heaven? Is it just a placebo drug that we can take to mask the pain of our real life? Because heaven was the only thing the Christian church taught me that was supposed to help me get through this life of pain and suffering. So I went to the Buddha for help, and he just taught me to step out of life, and that way you wouldn't feel the pain and suffering. But that just created a non-self with no desires and no way to create intentions for the future. So I finally found the one true God who had just purely loved me from the beginning, had never seen me as a sinner, only wanted my highest and best good. And I learned that this God was inside of me. Because Jesus had said this all along, the kingdom of heaven is within. Now, I was just thrilled to find this out because I finally now had the power I needed to go forth and make a life that I loved, that was filled with loving and being loved. How does thinking about heaven being inside of you make you feel? Well, my first question was, how in the world do I get to it, and how can I get it outside of me into my life? How do I make my heaven here on earth? So I got on the internet and began Googling ways to get into my heart. And here is where I found that God spark that has all the answers to life, that is just pure unconditional love. And this love in my heart knows who I am, why I'm supposed to be here, what I'm supposed to be doing, where I'm supposed to go, and how to get there. So all of the questions that I ask on this show, say what, where, when, and why, are all answered. And I'm chipping away at that hard shell around my heart, those walls I had built up to protect me against the pain and suffering of this life. And I'm letting myself feel again, to feel love. And I'm beginning by falling in love with myself. How does thinking about there not being a heaven out there in the sky someplace really make you feel? Actually, the word for heaven only means sky. Have you seen any place out there called heaven in reports that the Hubble telescope sends back? Does not believing in heaven make you feel abandoned? Does it bring up feelings of rejection or regret or resentment? Those three big R's that can destroy our lives. Rejection, regret, or resentment. Does it make you feel like God doesn't love you? What does heaven represent to you? Is it a place where the struggle is finally over? You'll be able to live a life like Kim Kardashian. Why do you think Kim Kardashian is able to live her life in heaven right here on earth, but that you have to die to get there? Why can't you have it here too? I think Kim Kardashian is the most Googled person on earth because people think she has a life of pure heaven on earth. And people think of heaven on earth as being beautiful and rich and doesn't have to go to some must-do job every day and lives in a mansion and drives a fancy car and she can just do whatever she wants whenever she wants. No limits, no boundaries, just think a thought and go do it. Well, she was on the David Letterman show one evening. And he asked her, how do you think you are a role model for young girls today? You were married in a wedding that cost millions and millions of dollars that only lasted 72 days. And while you are getting your divorce, you're dating another person of a different culture. And now you are pregnant by this second person who, while you are still married to your first husband. What is your message to young girls? Now, I would ask, why does every person in the U.S. know all the names of the Kardashian kids, but doesn't know one single scripture from the Bible, but still believes in heaven and hell? Do you believe in heaven so you won't go to hell? Did you know that the word for hell in the Old Testament only means a place of darkness, or a place of sleep, or a place of death? It's actually the word for when we just close our eyes and go into the transition called death. That's all it means. And in the New Testament, the writings were influenced by the writings of Dante's Inferno. And the church fathers in 320 AD saw a great way to put fear into the people by allowing the ideas of Dante to permeate the teachings of the church, because this provided them with a way to control the people and not let them know that they had any power. But the Christian church fathers added the concept of eternal suffering. Hell became a place where you would burn forever in the fires of damnation. Whereas in Dante's Inferno, the traveler only visited hell. He didn't stay there. Which is more like the idea of the Catholic Church of Purgatory. You go there, but you don't stay there. You can pray or buy your way out. Actually, in Revelation, the Bible says that Jesus took the keys to death and hell and threw them in the lake of fire. Now, I don't know exactly when the Christian Church thinks that this happened, the liturgy says that while Jesus was supposedly dead from the cross, that during that time he actually descended into hell and supposedly let everybody out of there. So to me, that would be the time when he took the keys to death and hell and threw them into the lake of fire. But fire is a transformational tool. It never destroys. Fire doesn't eliminate something. It just transforms it into something else. So even if there was an eternal hell, it would have to be remedial and eventually transform the essence of the soul into something else, or the concept isn't true. So what is the purpose of the cross if Jesus didn't defeat the powers of death and hell for us? So any way that you look at hell, the story is just plain full of holes. I believe people want to believe in hell because it's the only way they can handle the things that have happened to them that have never been dealt with. Violations of their trust or their body, betrayals of their love, being taken advantage of, all those things that have happened that have never been vindicated or validated in our lives. And so in our thinking, we just condemn that person to hell because at least there they will get what they deserve. But there's an eternal law of sowing and reaping. And this takes care of the what they deserved thing. What a person reaps, they sow. And sometimes we don't see it right away. Sometimes we don't ever see it. But it is a universal true law. What goes around comes around. And that person will eventually have an experience that they perpetrated on another. And then they will see what the truth is about that. Hell has been defined as a state of loss. Look at the state of loss in any person's life. That loss is an internal hell for them. I know a guy who owned a beachfront property, and just 2 weeks before the real estate crash, he was offered 2.5 times the amount of money he had paid for it by a qualified purchaser who wanted to buy it in the worst way. And this guy said no, thinking it was still going to go up and up more and more. And then 2 weeks later, the whole market crashed, and now the house is worth just barely what he owes on it. And he's been kicking himself every day since then. That loss is a daily hell for him. And another man I knew had been cheating on his wife for years and years. And because he knew that this was a violation of his marriage vows, the guilt that this knowing created in him caused him to live in a constant fear of getting cancer or having a heart attack. And he went to the doctor just for every teeny tiny little thing until finally one doctor refused to see him anymore. And he found this other doctor who treats him with an alarmingly casual attitude. And even after he had had a bout with Epstein-Barr, which is an autoimmune system ailment where the body actually attacks itself, as all autoimmune-related diseases are caused by a lack of self-worth and the need to be punished. And he was in the hospital for 2 months with paralysis in his upper body and unable to eat solid foods, had to be fed with an intravenous system. And after he recovered from all of this, and then went back to this casual doctor with complaints about sinusitis, the doctor prescribed a drug that has a side effect of possible Epstein-Barr. This doctor hadn't even checked his former medical records. When I went to visit him while he had the Epstein-Barr, I saw a man who was a raving maniac, helpless to do anything about his situation, and screaming for someone to help him. His wife should have divorced him years and years ago. There was plenty of money. She could have had a good life with someone who really loved her. But she had been taught by the Catholic Church that she could not be divorced and that her husband was her cross she had to bear, living her life in pain and suffering. And so, like a good Catholic, that's what she did. And he didn't divorce her because he didn't want to give her half the money. his excuse being that she wouldn't know how to handle it and would be bankrupt in a year. And they had three children who he wanted to make sure had everything that they needed. And he did see that those kids didn't lack for a thing, and he was always in good contact with them, so they knew they had a good dad. And now his wife has died, and you know what? He has the companionship of a lovely younger woman who is a skilled and loving caregiver who is going to stay with him and let him live out the rest of his life in peace and love and comfort. You know what, if I'd have been one of the women he'd played around with while he was married, telling them he was looking for his true love, I would have wanted him to be punished for his indiscretions and all the hurt these women felt when they learned the truth. But only the universe knows the full truth of what is in a person's heart. And only the universe knows the true purpose for a person's life. And if that person is doing what they're supposed to do. And our only concern should be for ourselves, and if we are doing what we are supposed to be doing. And if something has happened in our life, let me tell you, it's not about them or blame or being a victim. It's about us and us finding out, well, what was that all about? And learning the truth about ourselves, and then using our new tools to create better and more enjoyable events for ourselves. At my heart intelligence class this week, Dr. Bedore began by leading us in a centering meditation like she always does. And you know, I've been to 5 of these classes now, and she started every class with one of these centering meditations. But you know what? This past week was the first week that I actually could feel myself being in my body and actually feeling my buttocks on that chair. And when she invited us to take the elevator down to our heart and begin to breathe from our heart, I could finally actually feel myself doing this. And I began to feel an exhilaration throughout my entire body, through all the systems of my body, the nervous system, the circulatory system, endocrine system, muscle systems, digestive system, elimination system, in my bones, in my teeth, in the hairs on my head. I could feel my entire being, spirit, soul, and body begin to come into a resonance, coming into a oneness with all there is. And I felt an incredible peace and safety that is just mind-boggling in this world where a bomb can just blow up in front of us at any time. I invite you to try this right now. Feel yourself sitting in your chair. Feel your buttocks in the chair. Now take the elevator down to your heart and begin to breathe in and out through your heart. In 2, 3, 4. Out 2, 3, 4. In 2, 3, 4. Out 2, 3, 4. In 2, 3, 4. Out 2, 3, 4. Now set up a time soon, even today if you can, where you do this for 5 minutes. And then take a pencil and paper and record how you feel. Record what came up for you. Record everything that happened during those 5 minutes. Dr. Bedore is encouraging us to do this for 5 minutes every day for 3 months. You know, it takes you 6 weeks to break a habit. It takes you 3 months to form a new one. And she says that then it would be an entrenched way of breathing in our life. We have now found a new way. And then the truth is that all of the systems of our body will begin to be oxygenized in a very healthy way. And then all these systems will begin to work better. And soon we'll develop a new standard of health and wellness. Blood pressure becomes normal for us. blood sugar becomes normal for us. The endocrine system will begin to make much more feel-good hormones. The adrenals will be able to relax from their continually stressful flight-or-fight processes. We'll sleep better without medication. We'll begin to have creative thoughts for our highest and best good. And we can then make a picture, put it on our Xerox machine, and push the button for a happier, healthier life. And then if you find that some things come up that need dealing with, like old hurts or traumas, get a life coach and begin to work out these things. Get rid of them. You are the master of your fate. You are the creator of your soul's experience in the here and now. And soon, you will not need to believe in hell to punish all those people who did you wrong. And you won't need to look forward to dying and going to heaven, because you will begin to have your heaven right here, right now, on earth. I want to thank you for listening to my story and sharing this experience with me. In just 3 short months, I've had over 20,000 listens to my show. It's just incredible to me. I feel so happy that you're walking on this new path, listening with your heart. Beginning to feel again. I hope you're beginning to feel again, the beginning to feel love. And like I say in my wedding ceremony, week in and week out, all of us need and desire to love and to be loved. Because loving and being loved is all there is. You know, when I was studying for my ordination, I developed a very simple equation for life for myself. God is love, and we are made to love. We are to love ourselves and then love others as ourselves. We are to love ourselves first, because that's what it means to love God with all of your heart. You give God form. So to love God means to love yourself with all of your heart, and then to love others as you love yourself. So start today by forgiving yourself for being you. And then begin to enjoy yourself as being you. My music is by visionarymusic.com. It's music designed and created to support us in all of the transitions of our lives, to help us develop and create new strands of DNA so we can resonate at the higher frequencies of love, and to live our life from our heart. So this is Marcianne saying aloha. Aloha means hello. Goodbye.